Welcome to another edition of Beethoven Crisis and Creativity, a special program from Valley Public Radio, along with our friends from Fresno Philharmonic and the Philip Lorenz International Keyboard Concert Series. Happy to welcome this week Ray Hototo. Ray, welcome.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you as always, and our very special guest this week, the wonderful pianist Joyce Yang. Joyce, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
All right. We're going to talk about Mozart and Beethoven this week, and we have some really, really exciting piano works to get into. What's the first one we're going to get into, Ray?
Today, we're going to talk about a little bit, backing up a little bit into right before his middle period, where he was really still holding on to the classical style of Mozart and Haydn, but the other foot was in the next steps into the Romantic period. And so we're really going to explore a little bit more about what inspired Beethoven, who inspired Beethoven. And one of the people, of course, is Mozart. But first, before we get into Mozart and Beethoven, I want to explore the piano sonata opus 31, number 3. This is an interesting sonata because he is really asking himself, what can a sonata be? And so today, you know, I'm so thrilled to have Joyce Yang join us in this discussion. Joyce, I know you've played many of Beethoven's sonatas, and this one in particular is one that you love to play. Can you tell us a little bit about why you love playing this piece?
Well, this piece arrived pretty early in my life, and I think it's one of the, really the first Beethoven sonatas I've come across, and it just changed the way I think about what Beethoven's sonatas are supposed to sound like. When you're, you know, a teenager, you have an idea of who Beethoven is. And you start to play this sonata, and it's unlike any other. It's very quirky. And it's constantly searching, in not in this mysterious way, but it does sort of the exact opposite of what it should do. It starts with a question mark, like it's in E-flat major. And yet it starts in a chord that is, it's like, where are we? And only about 7-8 measures in, you get a little glimpse of the tonic, only to run away. It's like Beethoven saying, no, I'm not ready to begin yet. That was just a test. And he just runs away left and right. And even when I knew it so well in the concert, I remember feeling like I'm doing this a game of tag with Beethoven. Like I'm trying to, you know, really grasp what's going on in the music, only it just escapes you left and right. And it's this kind of playfulness that is so rare in this sonata that is not really found in many others. It's like little short stories that all seem to capture four different worlds. So it's in four different movement, which is also very unusual in Beethoven's piano sonata. And I just stayed with this piece for such a long time because I felt like it was never getting settled in my system. You know, you always learn something, hoping that one day you're like, oh, I know that so well.
Right. And I find this piece, especially like the first movement, it's got this shy quality to it. And it's like stops and starts a lot. You know, it's as if he's asking the question and then he's asking it again. And then he's pausing to reflect on the answer himself. And then he goes on, you know, it is a very quirky sonata and one that's not often performed. You don't hear it in concert halls very often. And what's interesting is that it's funny. It's got lots of humor in it. It's joyful, it's playful. And yet at the same time he was writing this piece in 1802, he was just really in the same year, he was thinking about his Heiligenstadt Testament, which we talked about earlier in these series, where he was really contemplating suicide. You know, so you have this person who's really battling, you know, one of the worst things a musician can have is this fear of loss of hearing. And then to write this incredibly joyful, playful piece, you just wonder where, you know, maybe the questioning was, oh, I'm just giving up, whatever, you know? And the question is like, how am I going to get through this? Let's do it by humor.
Yes, I like that. He's trying to find this linear thing forward and unable to do so. There's always this reaction to what just happened. And I feel like he's trying every single way to sort of navigate. Maybe it's searching in that way, in a playful way. It's like, is there another thread that could bring me to another chapter of my life? Or so in a way, I feel like maybe that's why it's unsettling, that it's constantly looking at all the little doors available within a phrase. And can we go here? Can we go there? No, that's a dead end. Let's go here. It's almost like trying to find whatever answers he was looking for. And because there are little snippets of thoughts that is interwoven, it becomes a little bit humorous in a way, because I feel like for something to be humorous, there is some kind of interruption. You know, it's not a linear journey. It's like there has to be something a little bit off center, off the narrative, something a little surprising, a little bit interruptive, only to be followed up by another interruptive sentence. So it sort of creates this very interesting landscape that I'm still trying to understand after all these years.
Wow. Well, and before you were just saying that it was four movements, which is unusual. And the piece is called The Hunt. Can you tell us a little bit about why it's called The Hunt?
When I first saw the word hunt or the chase for this piece, I really thought of my two hands trying to try to hunt each other. That made perfect sense to me, because it's they're reacting very badly to each other. It's like they can never come together. And right hand always runs away, never plays the downbeat. And left hand is sort of jabbing the downbeats time to time, saying like, here's a downbeat, here's a downbeat. And but the right hand's like, I don't care about you. I'm just going to run in that direction. So you have to find this balance between the two so you don't actually lose the hand. But I think I remember hearing the hunt also refers to the horn that starts at the very beginning of a hunt. And then in the very beginning, that sort of reminded some people of this starting of a hunt as a sport. But it's definitely has this chase aspect to the piece throughout.
Right. Yeah. And then that last movement at the very end, you have to cross your left hand way above the right hand in a very fast tempo.
Yeah. It's always
tell us
challenge.
A little bit. Yes. Tell us about that passage. How do you practice that, first of all? And is that scary to perform?
You know, you have to make sure that you're confident about it. I think with any jumps, that's important. But yeah, in the concert, it's the sense of time and space is very different. So it almost has to be automatic. But my one trick to really having that big gap and flying across the keyboard is to always get there a split second before you play. And I often say, like, you know, people that are on time are never actually on time. They're a little bit early, and then they wait a couple of minutes, and then they arrive, so they're on time. So in that same way, when you're doing a big jump and you need to arrive at a certain place on time, then I really spend as little time as possible in the air. I think that's important. I think people just, you know, bring their hand to a big semicircle around, and that's when you lose all the time in the air. You have to get to the surface as quickly as possible and then play it like it's the easiest thing in the world. That's one of the hardest tricks, not just being like, oh my God, here it comes.
Now we'll hear Joyce Yang performing the second movement, the Scherzo, of Beethoven's Piano Sonata No. 18 in E-flat major, Opus 31, No. 3, from her performance February 2010 at the Philip Lorenz International Keyboard Concert Series in Fresno. Thank you. That was the second movement of Beethoven's Piano Sonata No. 18 in E-flat Major, Opus 31, No. 3. The pianist was Joyce Yang, recorded in February 2010 as part of the Philip Lorenz International Keyboard Concert Series in Fresno. And Joyce Yang is our special guest on Beethoven, Creativity and Crisis. Ray Hototo continues our conversation.
I want to talk about a little bit now that we're exploring Beethoven and his influences, this whole school of thought of Mozart playing versus Beethoven playing. And I remember when I was in high school, I loved playing Beethoven sonatas too. They were challenging, but I thought Mozart was even more challenging. And if you want to share about your relationship with Mozart and Beethoven, how you feel about both of those sides of playing, these different ways of playing, because we're going to explore this piano concerto that you and I performed with the Fresno Philharmonic, the C minor piano concerto number 24. I kind of want to compare it to the first piano concerto of Beethoven's that we're going to hear later in this program. But first, maybe some similarities and differences between, as a pianist, playing both composers.
Playing Mozart can be very difficult because you want to create something pristine. It's like what I have in front of me is like an instruction to make the perfect pearl necklace. And when it's finished, it should just be have the essentials interwoven perfectly. And each pearl having its own beauty, but coming together effortlessly. And there's not this jarring or really showy gemstone in the middle of it. It has simplicity to it. And in that way, I think it scares the heck out of musicians sometimes playing Mozart's music, because we have this notion that it has to be perfect. We can't put anything extra to it. It's like the leanest, most gorgeous ingredient for a chef. It's like, I can't put aggressive spices on there because it'll ruin its natural beauty. And we're just constantly obsessed with this notion. And I've been victim to that as well. It's you just think of it so highly, and you can't hide anywhere as a performer. Like you can hide your shortcomings and your insecurities in a big virtuosic repertoire, like in a Rachmaninoff concerto, because there's lots of objects and you can bring out the object you're confident about and tell the audience, like, listen to this object, and then sort of hide, you know, where you can't quite deliver. But in Mozart, there is that one item on your dish. It's like the chef is presenting you with your next meal, and then there's just one bite. There's nothing else to look at. And there's, you know, magnificent, subtle flavors in it, but there's no, like, jalapeno sitting on it. So I make a lot of analogies to food, but it's a little scary. Whereas for me, Beethoven often has these accents, like we talked about, that you can hang on to. You can hang on to that. And then that propels the music forward. And there's a lot more sort of irregularity that I see in it, that it's almost comforting for me to hang on to. But if you didn't tell me whether it was written by Mozart or Beethoven, I feel like that's an interesting exercise. Would you play it differently? And after thinking about lots of early classical repertoire, which I don't play so much, I feel more comfortable playing late romantic repertoire, I think for the reasons I've described. But coming back to Mozart, Beethoven, even Bach, I started to play Bach again after many years of not playing it. I'm now approaching it totally differently than what should happen, how I should play it, how I should maybe play Mozart in a more Mozartian way. I'm just going to pretend like my friend Mozart wrote this piece last night and put it in my mailbox today. And no one's played it before. And I'm just going to play it and think about it like any other piece. Don't put all this pressure on what it should be. And I feel like with great compositions, it's like a gorgeous recipe. You know, you don't need to change it. You don't need to add anything to it. It tells you exactly how it should be done. And all you need to do is just, you know, follow the directions. And that's how I feel with a lot of Mozart's repertoire. And I can't get enough of it because it's so organically surprising. It's always, it's simple, and it always sounds inevitable in a way.
Yes, and Yeah, and I think Mozart's music is definitely has more melodic content, just because most of his music is influenced by opera. Whereas Beethoven, I think, has so much more of a motivic, rhythmic aspect to it. And again, for Beethoven, it was this force within him that needed to come out. Whereas Mozart, I feel, is a little bit more introverted, and the beauty is true beauty in itself. Without any ornamentation, it's just heavenly. And when we look at the manuscripts between the two composers, very few manuscripts of Mozart are surviving. But the thought process was very much right away, he's able to write it down. Whereas Beethoven was scratching out left and right. There's so much angst already in the manuscripts, you know, as he's writing these pieces, he's torturing himself. And you see it in the manuscripts that we have of Beethoven. So very polar different approaches, but both were incredible pianists and both played and premiered their concertos as they were written. So we were so excited to have you in Fresno, Joyce Yang, a couple of years ago when we did the Mozart piano concerto together. And I felt like we were making chamber music together.
I loved that evening. Thank you.
You know, it was so easy to play with you and work with you. And you had such a gorgeous sound that I'm dying to really share our collaboration together. Do you remember that evening, that performance?
Yes, I remember us looking over at each other going like, I'm so enjoying this, are you?
During the performance.
Yes, I loved it. I was really just enjoying it so much. And I remember it so fondly. Thank you so much for having me. And it's a piece I've had for a long time, and it went in many different directions over the years. It got very dramatic at one point. I was like, oh, this is late Mozart, this very Beethovenian, and Mozart is thinking outside the box, and I'm just gonna, you know, really expose everything that is so revolutionarily different about this piece. And then I think when we played together, I sort of calmed down from that and said, like, I don't need to highlight everything that's like so extraordinary. It'll speak for itself.
Indeed. Now let's let the music speak for itself. We'll listen as pianist Joyce Yang performs the first movement of Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 24 in C minor, Kürschel 491. Ray Hotoda leads the Fresno Philharmonic in this concert, recorded March 2019 at the William Saroyan Theater in Fresno.
Thank you.
That was the first movement of Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 24 in C minor, Kerschel 491. Music director Ray Hotoda led the Fresno Philharmonic in that performance, which was recorded March 2019 at the William Saroyan Theater in Fresno. And at the piano was Joyce Yang. This is Beethoven, Creativity and Crisis, a special program from Valley Public Radio. I'm David Alse, and Joyce Yang is our guest today. Ray Hotoda continues our conversation with Joyce Yang.
Well, let's go on to talk a little bit about Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 1. He wrote this around 1800. This piece is so delightful. It's so positive. It's in C major. And I really want to focus on the last movement, the Rondo. I still feel like his first and piano concertos are still in this kind of Mozartian mode of writing, but again, like the Opus 31, number 3, very playful. This is a rondo. So what I love about this is the palindrome, right? It's got an A, B, A, and then the middle C, and then an A, B, A. So A is one theme, B is another theme. So you'll hear this as you're listening through this whole last movement. But this palindrome, which is so interesting to me, Tell us about the rondo.
It's funny, when I first learned the piano, I learned like a sonata form and a rondo form and different forms of music with different plastic food shapes. So like when I was 4 years old, I started to play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star like every beginner. And my aunt, my first piano teacher, would put the bread, and then which is the section A, and then there's the meat in between, which is the section B, the development, and then A again. And it was like a sandwich. And then as a kid, I was like, okay, that makes sense. Okay, bread, meat, bread. And she was like, now let's just play the meat. And then I knew in my mind that was the development. It was a good way of remembering. And rondo started out like a Monte Cristo sandwich. It was like bread, meat, bread, cheese, bread. You know, it's like there's bread in between all the other ones, which is exactly what you're talking about. So whenever I hear a rondo format, I just have this image of a sandwich in my head. But it was a good way of remembering things. And so it's this piece. So it's a lot of bread.
No, but I think it's so important to for the listeners to hang on to that, because it really helps you navigate the piece and what to expect next. But I really want to talk about the, okay, what is C? The Swiss cheese in the middle? But the C motive is an A minor, right?
Oh, I love it.
And to me, actually, I recently played this about 5 years ago, and I loved playing that middle C section because to me, it sounds like a 1920s Charlie Chaplin police car racing through in a black and white movie.
I love that. Now that I'm gonna have that image stuck in my head next time I play. Until now, it was samba, because like I
played samba
in Fort Worth Symphony with Miguel Hart Bedoya, and then I remember in the conductor soloist session I was playing up to that section, and he was like, now the samba. I mean, I laughed so hard, and then since then, and then he like turns to me right before I play that, and it, which really makes me laugh when the conductor suddenly turns and gives me a face before an interesting section coming up. And I can't get over it. And now your image in my head next time. And it's actually, don't you think it's kind of tricky, because it happens three different times and each time you need to make a different turn?
Yes, absolutely.
Comes in and I have so much fun starting to play it. But I know now when I start that, I need to have the blueprint. Like, I'm going to take this hilarious journey three times. Better make the right turns on each one, because I don't want to get unzipped with the orchestra.
Right. And in that section, in that C section we're talking about, we have the stride piano in your left hand. So yeah. It's like, it's also like a little bit like Fats Waller or something, you know, it's just jumping around, and you have to make sure you're in the right key and the right turns that you make, especially like we were saying.
Now that you say that, the left hand jumping, it kind of it turns into something hysterically, I mean, it becomes 10,000 times bigger, but in Shostakovich first piano concerto, at the very end, the left hand starts jumping in that way, and it does have that incredible effect to have that that texture in the left hand. And I'll pay better attention to that next time I play it.
But anyway, it's such an amazing concept that Beethoven wrote this, you know, almost 100 years before we have this popular context to it, you know, that he was able to innovate that out of thin air. He was able to write that music and make it sound like something from the 20th century.
Yes, yes, it's shocking. And in the second section, so now not the Swiss cheese, the one away from the bread before that. that one also has that same accent, actually, as the Beethoven 31 number 3 sonata. Its second movement, the ta-da-da-ba-da-da-da-da, you know, it has that accent where there should never be an accent, you know, right before the downbeat, and he jabs it. And I think when I hear that, I was like, oh, you know, Beethoven's signature, it's starting here, just you know, it's sort of, you see the spark in his eyes. You know, it's starting to add his own textures, and then what would seem like a totally matter-of-fact sort of a phrase you would never really think twice about suddenly has this, and then like makes you pay attention, and you wake up and you're like, why is that there? What are we doing? Is this funny? Is this angry? Why is there an accent? You know, he started asking all these questions. And I love that he makes all musicians like alert, you know, it's just like, what is this? And I've been, you know, working on the Hammerklavier, and it's like, I cannot believe what is going on. It's like, I have to compare additions because it's so shocking. It's like, you know, people that come 50 years after that wouldn't dare writing something so so surprising and right. outside the box. And he just does it. And I love that there's, you know, never a preparation to it. He just sort of goes directly to the point.
Right. It's like unpredictable. It's unpredictable. Yeah. And that's an incredible aspect of Beethoven, too, is that he's impulsive. And in his, you know, impulsiveness, we have this great music that is so unpredictable and so satisfying to play too at the same time.
Yes. And I have to tell myself that don't get like so carried away with these unpredictable things, because I'm so overjoyed as the performer that I know what they are before the Yeah. I get to play it for the audience. So sometimes I play these accents sort of so removed from the texture of the rest of the phrase. And I just, I kick myself because it's so much fun to be impulsive. And that's very, very much sort of my personality in a way, because it's, I mean, people that like me think it's spontaneous, but it can be very impulsive at times. And it comes out in music and I'm like, oh, my opportunity to sort of exit from the structure and then, you know, give some big surprise to it. But I think in Beethoven, that is important. The reason why I can't just crash down on these accents is because it really does have to be all in relation with the rest of the phrase, and they all need to nestle together and become one whole. It's like that accent by itself does not have a meaning, really. It exists because of what comes before and what's after. So creating that balance, I think, is always interesting and challenging work.
Here's pianist Andras Schiff performing the third movement of Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 1 in C major, Opus 15.
Thank you. That was pianist Andras Schiff performing the third movement of Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 1 in C, Opus 15. Bernard Haitink led the Staatskapelle Dresden. We'll now hear just a little bit more of our conversation with Ray Hatoda and our special guest, pianist Joyce Yang.
Well, thank you, Joyce. This was fantastic to talk with you and share these pieces with you again. It's like I'm reliving them again, so it's great.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. So much. I've never been so hungry after one of these.
I remember once after the review came out to one of the recordings I made with Augustin Heiderich, because I'm always the impulsive one when it comes to the two of us. And I feel like I always like to go off texture sometimes in a concert, and I'm like, oh, here is a smoked paprika. You did not see this coming, but this is what I feel like today. And then I was like, when he's just trying to just be, you know, be very seldom with the spices and the, you know, elegant pink salt. And I'm just like, smoke, and, you know, and then I remember him asking me like, why are you comparing me to a steak? Anyway, but I really think, music and food, it's so closely related. And no
I agree.
Why musicians are just foodies.
Yes, I totally agree.
Joyce Yang, thanks so much for joining us. Ray Hatoda, thanks to you as always.
Thank you, David.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This has been Beethoven, Crisis and Creativity, a special program from Valley Public Radio, together with the Fresno Philharmonic and the Philip Lorenz International Keyboard Concert Series. Our special thanks to Andreas Wertz of the Philip Lorenz International Keyboard Concert Series for helping us to arrange talent and recordings for this series. Special thanks also to Stephen Wilson and Ray Hatoda of the Fresno Philharmonic. Thanks always to the musicians of the Fresno Philharmonic for their outstanding musicianship and dedication. And special thanks to our special guest in this episode, the wonderful pianist Joyce Yang, for sharing her knowledge, passion, and enjoyment. For Valley Public Radio, I'm David Alves. Thank you. This is Valley Public Radio, FM 89, NPR for Central California, KVPR Fresno, and KPRX Bakersfield. Listen on your smart speaker, kvpr.org, and the KVPR app.